Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we've redefined what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to Inclusive Collective, where we share stories and learnings of inclusive people, organizations, and innovations. I am your co-host, Nadia Butt. I'm an organizational development and belonging strategist. And I am joined by my lovely and favorite co-host, Rob Hadley, a people and culture strategist specializing in DE&I and people analytics. Hello, Rob. Welcome back.
Nadia, happy 2023. We did it.
Happy 2023. We did do it. We did.
We made it through the holiday season, the new year. We took 3 weeks off. We're so refreshed, right?
Yes. Oh, my God. I feel like, did you not need that time or what?
I definitely needed that time. I did want to ask you, that was one of the questions I had for you, is how's your energy as you start 2023? Because I've heard from a lot of people, they're just really struggling to get going in the early part of January here.
Yeah, I believe that. You know why? I think it was weird this year because like Christmas was on a Sunday. Then we had that Monday off as like the religious, you know, observant. Then New Year's Eve fell on Sunday. So we had that Monday off as observance for New Year's. And then I feel like the rest of the week was sort of just like, meh. some people kind of got back to work, but it was a struggle. And then, yeah, I feel like it just, I don't know if people are still burnt out, but yeah, it was a struggle to get back into the
I don't know
year.
Either, but I've heard from so many people. And I think you're right. I think it was the timing a little bit. But yeah, so any big news? Did you get any nice gifts over the holiday season, like anything you liked or happy about?
No gifts. I mean, a lot of friends and family got COVID. So
yeah.
So that was a lovely gift. But
yeah, we got that.
Yeah, too, the numbers skyrocketed. Yeah, did you get that too? Skyrocketed. No, but you know what? I started looking at cars because mine's dying.
Oh.
So I was just online. I didn't go test drive anything, but I was online looking.
I think we're going to get into that when we do our episode here today. I think we may get into some of the things related to car buying. But, well, let's get to it. So let's talk about, we're kicking off our new season or just starting again after a little bit of a break. We're both pumped and refreshed. And yes, today we're going to do predictions for 2023 yes, in the world of workplace culture and diversity, equity, and inclusion. Before we get to that, I did want to talk about one particular news story because it is in that theme of predictions. You know, we usually do the deets, but so one thing, I did see a headline that CEOs predict a shallow recession. It was a survey from the Conference Board reported in the Wall Street Journal. I dug into it and it looks like that 98% of CEOs surveyed expect a mild recession. And you know what that means, right, Nadia?
What does that mean?
Hold on to your hats. We're all going to die, right? Like,
oh boy. So dramatic, Rob.
No, I mean, these are when CEOs are unanimously agreed that it's going to be a mild recession. I mean, I think about CEOs are the most lied to people in the world, right? Like they ask their teams, they say, hey, are we going to have a bad recession? And the team says, no, boss, everything's going to be fine, right? So, you know, it also speaks to the fact that companies like Amazon and Salesforce over the course of the last few weeks, they had these dramatic cuts in their workforce. Even though they have huge cash reserves, and we know that they think it's still just going to be a mild recession, but they really did cut to the bone in the way that they laid people off. And so, you know, they're still taking a big hatchet to their workforce. So I found that very interesting.
Yeah. I'm curious, is it just tech world? Or like, is it happening in like financial services? Like where do you think it's?
Well, last week Goldman Sachs announced their 3,000 to 4,000 person layoffs as well. I think it starts to trickle down. I think that tech is a leading indicator in this case because they were the one that staffed up so aggressively you know, in the last couple of years. So you start to see it trickle into other sectors as well. But yeah, 98% of CEOs don't think it's going to be that bad, but they're still taking steps to reduce their workforce, which is very interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So that was the one thing I wanted to get to was CEO predictions before we go into our own predictions. Let's do a few. Let's go back and forth. Each of us have come up with our top three predictions for 2023. It feels like I said, the way that this year is going, it feels like we're halfway through 2023. I wrote some of mine and at the end of last year, what I was going to talk about today. And it just feels like the year's half over. We should be doing our reflection edition at this point. But let's see what you got. I'm going to have you lead it off.
Yeah.
Number one.
So just to let everybody know, we didn't run this by each other. So these are going to be kind of fun to share and get reflections from each other. I might not have anything to add.
Yeah, maybe.
To what Rob has to say. But all right. So I'm going to start off. Many of the trends that I'm seeing are personal things that I'm seeing. And then just through conversation. So the first is companies will start to evaluate employee resource group effectiveness.
Mm.
And so what I mean by that is many organizations have implemented employee resource groups. For those that may not know, some people call them employee affinity groups or employee network groups. But basically, with the implementation of these groups, this includes maybe resources, budget, time allocation, talent, sponsorship, or sponsors, right? And so at some point, stakeholders will want to understand the effectiveness of these groups. Leaders are going to start asking the questions. They're going to start asking, like, what are these groups doing to align to business objectives and priorities?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, is it helping in solving the problem, like recruitment or retention? Has it helped in career development? Things like that. And so I guess without providing too much suggestions around how to solve, like how to actually track some of that, I have some thoughts that I can share later. But curious, are you seeing this as well in terms of evaluating employee resource group effectiveness?
I think what I've seen over the last several years is a difficulty in evaluating the effectiveness of these particular groups. And, you know, it starts with the fact that companies want to be inclusive, so therefore they want to invite everyone to participate. And sometimes it's difficult to track who's even a member of a particular affinity group, and therefore makes it difficult to see or measure any differences in how those are the engagement or any kind of attachment to the organization of those particular employees versus anyone who's not there. So that's the first problem, is just even understanding who's in the affinity group and who's in the affinity group, and then what that translates to in terms of business results. So it's just really hard to do, and that's something that companies are definitely struggling with.
Yeah, you know, and I think of, like, it's not just, you bring such a good point. Like, it's employee participation, membership, but it's also, like, think of all the last few years, how many events are put on, mentorship programs that have been developed through it. There's all of this stuff, and you're right, it's so hard to track. And then, and so measure, track, and then also aligning it back to the business priorities, like you said, and what that ultimately means to the organization. So I would like to say or encourage people who are, you know, leaders of ERGs to start to think about what that measurement and tracking process looks for. If you haven't thought about it yet, think about, you know, ERGs as a solution. So, like, what problem were you trying to solve for, and is that being met? So just something to think about and consider.
I love it.
Yeah,
great one to kick us off here. Let's talk about inflation support is my prediction. And so this goes back to you wanting to purchase a car. I don't envy anyone that wants to purchase a car right now. It's very
I'm literally waiting for the CRV to die over here, like, fully.
This came to me. So this thought came to me. I was sent out on an errand to go to the store, And I noticed that the Luna bars, you know, you're familiar with the Luna bar?
I am. Nadia? Yes.
Yeah. The Luna bars. They were a full dollar more than they were at this time last year, right? So like Luna bars topping out at over $2 for me. And I know that the cost of producing a Luna bar have not gone up 100% over the last year. I know that for an absolute fact. Average inflation.
Wait, but how do you know that? It's just like something you've researched.
So that's 100% increase. Average inflation has gone up 8 to 9% over the last 20, 24 months. Okay. And did you know, Nadia, that corporate profit taking is one of the main drivers of inflation as companies pass their increased cost onto consumers? In fact, in the third quarter of last year, which is what we have data for, companies recorded record profits while many of their workers and their families struggled, as you know. So I really think that what you'll have to see this year, what I expect to see, is companies start to think about how they can reinvest those record profits in their employees in an effort to keep, especially frontline workers, from fraying at the edges, right? So start to figure out how they can support their workforces. I think that in 2023, companies will have to get proactive, creative, in thinking about what kind of financial support employees need. You know, another high year of inflation cannot be met with 4% salary increases, right? In addition to stipends. So there are all these different things that companies will need to start thinking about how they can do. The stipends, think about other ways to support families, daycare, education assistance. This is where flexibility becomes really important, as we talked about a lot last year. So perhaps a company doesn't want to offer childcare services, doesn't have the means to do it, but they can give, especially frontline workers, flexibility, which they may not have had previously in their schedule, so that they don't have to pay for an extra day of childcare. And so I think that you'll start to see companies get a lot more creative and flexible if they don't want 2023 to be the year of unionization, right? So that's
interesting.
So I think that that's something they need to be looking at very, very hard right now.
Does inflation support kind of show up in different ways, like an end of the year bonus or like a retention bonus or something like that? Can it?
For sure. I think that it just needs to be evaluated holistically. And like I said, I think that companies will need to be a little bit more creative, because I think you'll start to see workers really, you know, like I said, companies are doing really well right now. They don't expect to see a big drop in corporate profits through a recession this year. So they need to start to invest some of those corporate profits in their workforce, unless they want us to see more and more unionization.
Sure. All right, folks, we'll be right back with the rest of our 2023 trends after this break.
All right, welcome back. Nadia and I are looking into our crystal ball and making predictions for the rest of 2023. Nadia, what do you got for us? Number three on our predictions list.
Number three on our predictions list. So one-off trainings are going to die. And I do think strategy becomes the norm. So over the past few years, we've been kind of observing organizations do training after training after training. And I think last year, the organizations were starting to recognize that training's not going to like move the needle as much as they want in terms of like a behavioral shift. So what I'm starting to see and what I predict is that these leaders are wanting to have more of a strategy around diversity, equity, inclusion versus kind of these one-off trainings. And so they're wanting to see like a roadmap of how to thoughtfully embed inclusive competencies into everyday talent management practices. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what organizations make the commitment to not only developing a thoughtful strategy and approach, but also really to follow through on that approach, because that obviously is a huge commitment. And really, you know, to be intentional about it is something that I think folks will have to commit to. So I'll pause there.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope it's a big year for strategy. And you know what? You know what helps you build a strategy that's effective?
Yeah. What helps
it's
you build?
It's deeply understanding where you are and what your organization looks like, what your workforce looks like, and setting objectives and very clearly laying out where you want to be going forward. and mm-hmm. using data to do that. So I hope that you're right. And I think that's the case. I actually heard anecdotally that people that just do trainings are struggling to win business in the early part of 2023 and at the end of last year as well, as companies mm-hmm. start to look for a more comprehensive and robust strategy around diversity, equity, inclusion. So I hope you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. All right, Rob, what's the fourth prediction?
You know, I always double dip on these things, right?
Okay, I thought you were going to say double down.
I double down too. That's okay. Two for one on trends. Something I hear a lot of is a concern that DEI budgets will be trimmed as the economy pulls back and budgets tighten. The same time, you see a lot of trend lists show that HR will continue to digitize and that the growth, there will be continued growth in analytics to help HR leaders and business leaders make decisions around people. However, those two things don't work together. There has never,
tell me more about this.
There has never been a time in my career on any project where I worked on that an organization invested in better metrics and a greater transparency around diversity, equity, inclusion in their workforce, where the result was not a greater investment in diversity, equity, inclusion, right? So I have never dug into a company's DEI data and walked away and said, hey, everything's working great. There's really nothing to improve here. You all are doing really well. There's, our work is done. So, and I would invite anyone who's familiar with DEI and HR data to provide an example to the contrary. So my prediction is that DEI budgets will stay flat to increase slightly, even though the economy slows.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I could see that happening. What came to my mind was like capturing sentiment versus just pure analytics of like the data of. So yeah. Okay.
Well, those two things work together, right? So
they work hand in hand. Yeah.
So I think that organizations oftentimes do a pretty decent job at understanding sentiment and don't necessarily see that they have a lot of great operational data that can be used to develop and build a DEI strategy. And two things work very well together.
Yeah, they do. Okay. I've run into some companies in the last couple of months that don't have good sentiment data. So what would you recommend to an organization to capture that?
Well, both quantitative and qualitative methods of capturing sentiment data, doing a really good, thorough assessment of the factors associated with diversity, equity, inclusion in organizations, so a comprehensive survey. Yeah. And then obviously there's the option of interviews, focus groups,
and the like,
and then pulling those things together.
Okay, very good. Should we go to my...
Let's
Which
do
would
it.
Be our fifth?
What's the? Okay. There should be a prize for whoever gets the most, right? So we'll have to put a pin in these.
I know. Actually, we should do that. Yeah, we'll capture that by the end of the year. Okay, like that. So my third prediction here is that measurement will start to align to key performance indicators and performance evaluations. So we're already starting to see this, at least through the work that I'm doing. I feel like I'm starting to see where diversity, equity, inclusion behaviors and competencies are really starting to be embedded and aligned to key performance indicators. I also like to consider them to be key behavior indicators, and then also embedded into performance evaluations. So when this is done and done nicely, they are behavioral competencies that are aligned to things like organizational values and guiding principles and part of the talent management behavioral framework. And oftentimes companies don't have a behavioral framework in terms of what is expected of folks in terms of how they behave. Once it's done, it's made nicely, then what can happen is that can be embedded into performance evaluations, performance coaching, and performance feedback. And it kind of works really nicely as a system. But we can get to that at a later episode. I have hope that measurement will start to really be, folks will start to be held accountable through the performance evaluations and through leveraging key performance indicators that are behavioral. What are your thoughts?
Awesome. Yeah, I've been for several years working on, or, you know, in various projects around trying to understand behaviors and trying to measure behaviors. So what you're seeing, just to clarify, is you're seeing more companies measure behavior change and
thinking about it.
And then measure something with regard to behaviors or capabilities around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and then build that into performance evaluations and tie things like compensation to those measurements.
Compensation or performance review. So whether that's, you know, because I think compensation comes after the fact, but absolutely it's tied to maybe your rating at the end of the year, or just performance coaching in general. And so I haven't actually seen it formally done where it is tied to performance compensation. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to have maybe someone, one of our listeners can maybe like call in and let us know how they've observed that in their workplace, if that happens. But I have started to hear the conversations occurring where people are starting to think in that manner, where I feel like a year ago, 2 years ago, that was not the conversation. The conversation is,
yep,
have you had this training? Right? Like, did you go to this training and no application whatsoever? No behavioral understanding, and then, you know, an expectation that people change. So I think if anything, it's more of a conversation. I don't predict that companies by the end of this year will have a robust program related to it, but I think the conversation is starting to happen, and, you know, so we'll see. Change does not happen overnight.
All right.
So we should see by the end of the year where folks are with that.
Okay. I'm excited. I'm hoping that this is I hope it's something that I get to work on personally over the course of the year.
Yeah.
More data is better, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not. But that really feeds into my last and final prediction.
Yeah.
And that's so Nadia, this is called Battle of the Robots, right? So one of the movies that I watched over the course of the holiday break was Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Are you familiar with this movie?
Like the old, like the 80s, 90s?
It's probably like late 80s, early 90s, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, totally.
You remember? Bill. Okay. So yeah, in it, just
Keanu
to recap.
Keanu Reeves was in it.
Keanu Reeves. And so, you know, not to get too deep into the plot, but there's not much depth of the plot anyway. So, but a bad guy from the future builds two robot Bill and Teds, who Bill and Ted call the evil usses, and sends them back to the present day to kill Bill and Ted, who then build their own robots, who they call the good robot usses, to kill the evil robots, which brings us to ChatGPT.
Yes. Okay.
So, Nadia, I think this entire year, all we'll be talking about in the business world is coming to terms with the power of AI-powered chatbots, how we use the technology effectively, and how to mitigate their impact in HR and DEI as well. So these fields will be no different. Let me give you an example. I was recently talking to someone who said their company, their managers were using chatbots to write annual reviews for their employees. So instead of going through the process of writing out several reviews, managers would put in a couple bullet points. They would put in some other things, reviews that they had done previously, and voila, the chatbot would spit out an annual review written in their voice. So,
wow.
And then on the other hand, there's another project that I'm working on where I'm working to build out an equitable and impactful performance review process. And one of the things that you might do if you're doing something like that is look at the current review process, look at the evaluations, do some text analysis, try to understand where there's bias in that review process through looking at the way that the reviews are written. And so you just have to think through all these scenarios. If a manager's using a chatbot to write reviews, right? Like, I can't then use that text in order to analyze if there's bias in their process. And then the second thing is, anytime a chatbot is being used in any of these people processes, we have to ask ourselves, is it, you know, is there any value in that process to start with, right? Like in that case of annual reviews, is the performance evaluation, or the act of writing reviews, is it just administratively burdensome to the point where it's worthless?
Like,
does it necessarily add value, right? And so, as we say, the conversation between two people is the important thing in annual reviews, then, you know, then is that what should, you know, annual review should center on? if that's the case, should we be recording them and analyzing them, right? And starting to understand what's happening there. So should your one-on-ones be recorded and analyzed? I don't know, because just the use of these chatbots and as it starts to emerge in the HR space could be a signal that we need to really rethink the value of entire processes.
Yeah, that same conversation, Rob, is being had in the academic world, where papers are being written by.
Right. Of course.
Chat, what is it called?
ChatGPT.
ChatGPT. And my chair and I wanted to test it out with my dissertation, and she asked the ChatGPT my problem of practice, which is like a research question. And what it gave back was so interesting. Literally, it was as if it wrote my paper for me. It was wild. It's really interesting. And I will be curious to see what happens at the end of the year with this, for sure.
Yeah. And and we speak so much to founders and investors, and you're also starting to see tons of money pouring into what the applications of this can be. And funding startups that can harness the power of AI to, you know, for whatever benefit in whatever industry. And so it'll be interesting to see. You'll start to see some of these applications in the HR and DEI space as well. And so I don't have a prediction of what they will be. But if you start to see it show up, again, that's a signal that maybe what we're doing doesn't necessarily add value.
Interesting. Yeah. Very good, Rob. Well, let's go ahead and take a break here. We will be back with our rants and raves. Hey, folks, welcome back to the rant and rave section. I believe, Rob, we're just going to do raves today because it's the beginning of 2023. Let's kick this year off on a positive note. How do you feel about that?
I like it. Double raves. Maybe we just double do raves. Double rave. I'm sure there will be things to rant about over the course of the year. But so first rave for me of the year, Nadia. I want to rave about us. I want to give ourselves a shout out.
We posted an article
on LinkedIn. We posted this 5 ways DEI is essential to startup success. And if you haven't read it already, go ahead and check it out. It is a short compilation of some of the key themes that emerged over the course of our very first season here on Inclusive Collective, where we spoke to a lot of founders and investors. We spoke about the startup and venture capital world, had some amazing guests, and they helped us walk through how diversity, equity, inclusion fits or applies to every stage of startup maturity. And, so we just tried to distill that in a quick article and came out really well. And I think everyone should check it out.
It's located on LinkedIn.
Our LinkedIn page.
Absolutely, go ahead. Our LinkedIn page, Inclusive Collective LinkedIn page. So definitely take a peek at it and let us know what you think, or reshare it if you liked it. So, and I will end the double rave here on the celebration and observance of Martin Luther King Day. So our episode releases today, January 16th, which is also MLK Jr. Day, just remembering him and other social activists that are continuing to do and push forward the unfinished work to redeem the soul of America.
Well said, Nadia.
Thank you. So actually, I don't know how you observe it, but I'm in Washington, D.C. and really hoping to head over to the MLK Memorial.
Yeah. Are you going to be able to do that?
I hope so. Yeah, hoping it's not raining. So maybe I'll post that picture.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, I hope everyone has a great day off and really has the opportunity to reflect on the life and legacy of Dr. King.
Absolutely.
All right, Nadia. Inclusive Collective is a production of Rafilion Media. We would love to hear from you. Please send us your feedback at inclusivecollective@rafilion.com. You can find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to get in touch with us for consulting, check out Nadia at nasconsultants.com and Rob at tecanoconsulting.com. Get ready for some amazing guests in 2023. I'll see you next week, Nadia.
See ya. Be well.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.